the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
No stopping me breaking barriers. I keep on crushing it till I am done. I didn't get here by accident. No, I've been gunning it since I was young.
All right. Welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. Like usual, hasn't changed in 3 years. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. If I let these guys have a say in the matter, it probably will. But I am your host, Eric Dorsch. I can't take you seriously with that Miami Heat background. I really can't, Jay. Like, you are just... Yeah. Every week, I know you guys can't see what we see, but every week, Justin has a background that just... I don't know about you, Russ. I feel like it hints to something we're going to see eventually in the show or hear about eventually in the show. But other weeks, I feel like he just gives us a background to throw us off. Like, you spend the whole time digging through our rundown going, where the hell are the Miami? And this week, it's the Miami Heat in a very lovely neon pink and blue jerseys with the color on them. And it's like, I'm digging through the rundown trying to figure out, where is this going to come into play?
I don't even know either.
I have no idea either. But it's like at the beginning of shows, right, where you see, like, on a previous episode and it jumps around to a bunch of different ones. You're trying to connect the dots. Like, ooh, I remember those two were together and then they broke up. Why is that relevant now? And I look forward to it every time. What's going to be my preview from Jay?
Absolutely. Now, Jay, do you want to tell us if it's going to come into play, or do you just want to let this game unfold and we'll see what happens?
Yeah, Dwayne Wade actually made the Monday express line to the 3M Open at TPC, so he'll be playing in the competition, so that's what we're doing here today.
Dwayne Wade?
Yeah, that guy.
Dwayne Wade doesn't
play
golf.
No, that's the surprise. He's playing golf next weekend in Minnesota.
Are you thinking Steph Curry, maybe? Because that's believable.
Maybe. We'll see. Surprise twist.
Jay quickly is scrolling through his computer to make sure he didn't misread something. or he's going to find out there's someone named like Damian Wade on the tour that he didn't know about.
All right.
Ton of stuff to do. We're going to have a lot of fun towards the end of the show. We came up with a couple, I guess you can call them best of topics, but they're really just, let's see what kind of shenanigans we can get into and how many times Justin's going to throw a hypothetical at us that just doesn't make sense. But before we do that, we've been talking about it for the last couple weeks because we've kind of, you know, been chomping at the bit for it. As of right now, sports is officially back. Baseball's set to start, I believe, tomorrow. You have hockey and basketball. They're gearing up. There's been some scrimmage basketball games. We might get into this whole, the NHL's got this injury policy that doesn't really make sense because it's like we're trying to hide it, but we're not really going to do a very good job of hiding it because anyone's going to be able to figure out what's wrong with these people unless you're going to make everybody walk around in crutches even if they have COVID. So we'll work with that. But I want to ask you both, as sports gets ready to return, this is the weirdest question to ask, Russ, because it's been so long since we've seen a live sport, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the first sport that you feel is just going to drop off your radar once everything gets going again?
Baseball.
Okay.
easy. Casey Mize got sent down. That was the one thing that was going to get me to tune in to one of these Tigers games, is if he makes a start. I'm already only looking at the future for that team. So it didn't take much to knock me off of that one. It's baseball.
Yeah, if it's anything different for Justin, I'll be astonished. But I'm going to ask it anyway. Jay, with them all coming back, obviously, hockey is going to be your numero uno. I just feel it. You spent the last couple of months, you know, after that Last Dance documentary, which, by the way, it's on Netflix, Jay, so you can rewatch it all the way through if you want to. It's officially up. You said you're going to give the NBA the real college try. Football, we're still a little ways away. And by the way, I don't know if either of you guys saw, football announced their kind of schedule. And apparently it's going to be 20 days of training camp before they're even going to let these guys put pads on. It's going to be the first, like, 4 days is just COVID testing and physicals. So it could be a long time before we actually see real football again. But assuming football gets it back, Jay, what's the sport that's just going to kind of slowly fade off your radar? Maybe you'll watch a couple just because you want to see it one, you know, for a minute, and then it's just going to be like, okay, that's enough.
One sport that's definitely falling off is the competition of sharp knives cutting things. We had that back in April, which that was shocking. I don't think I've even seen that. You guys see what I'm talking about or no?
Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about, this horrible fever dream of a thing.
There's like a 2-minute block, and the guys have to cut through certain objects at certain length and depth, and then the quickest you can do it is you win the competition. We won't be watching that anytime soon.
Justin, filming something in your garage with your iPhone doesn't count as a national sports everybody saw.
This is the weirdest ad for Cutco knives I've ever seen.
He's going to get a call.
I promise you.
He's going to get a call from Will Ferrell and Ryan Gosling for the knife guys.
we will tweet it out. I promise you it exists. I've only seen it once as well. But so to answer your question more honestly, NBA is getting my whole heart and attention. So it's definitely not going to be basketball. If we get football back, baseball's out the door. Yeah. They're last man in. So they're going to be out, but I don't think we're going to get football, to be honest with you. And if we're not getting football, I don't think there's going to be a lot of sports to watch.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping we do get football, and if we do, baseball's out. I'm in love with basketball right now. Baseball will get its turn when I'm interested again.
Yeah. I was talking to Erin yesterday about this. She's like, are you going to set the DVR and all that for, you know, Fox Sports Detroit for baseball? And I said, I don't see the point, because all it's going to be is 10 games that I'm going to watch, and then it's, you know, by the 20th game, it's the same thing, and I'm just going to kind of lose interest, because I really do, like Russ said, I really doubt that we're going to see much of Mize. We're not probably going to see Torkelson. We're not going to see these guys that we actually want to see on a year that we more likely should see them, because this is a 60-game season. Unless 30 games in, we're 25-5, which will not happen. There's no reason for us not to see these guys. This is a good practice year. Only the best teams are going to win a title this year, Jay.
So you're not buying the notion that, well, any team can get hot. Like, one guy can go on a stretch for 5-6 weeks and just take. Like, I heard the Tigers get asked that question. Like, yeah, anyone can get hot. We can do this. But no.
Yeah, but see,
we don't have the talent to do that yet. I don't buy that. I don't know if you are.
But see, in theory, anyone can win at poker. But do you notice it's the same 10 guys that win bracelets every year? Like, I'm not trying to. Anyone can get hot. It's true. At the start of a season. Russ, I know I'm going to mess with your head here with your odds and how much you love them. At the start of the season, everybody has the same odds of winning the Super Bowl.
Disagree.
In theory, though, everybody starts 0-0. At the start of the season, all the records are the same. It's not until we get to week 8 that you realize, wow, yeah, not even close. Like, some teams are 8-0, some are 0-8, some, you know, are, it's just, it's done for. So, I believe me, as a Detroit sports fan, I want to believe that the Tigers, hey, all they have to do is get hot for 2 months. 2 months of really good baseball, and they could do it. But unfortunately, I've been in Michigan long enough that I've seen the first 2 months of baseball seasons for Tigers, and I would bet you guys, whatever you want to bet, it's more likely we'll be 5-25 than we'll be 25-5. So as much as I want to jump on that hot streak, and I'm going to root for them all the way, I never give up on them until it's time to give up on them. So I'm just... Unless I'm going to see Torkelson, unless I'm going to see Mize, unless I'm going to see all these guys, I'm good. Baseball will probably be the one that falls off. Of course, I'm going to pay attention to hockey. I'm going to pay attention to basketball. Someone needs to explain the game of basketball to Justin while it's happening, so I have to pay attention. And then football is, you know, my first love, so I'm gonna watch football, Russ.
It's time to give up on them. I just want you to know now.
Oh my god.
Fuck this. You all suck. I quit.
That's pretty much where he's sitting right.
That's Cameron Maben in about 2 weeks.
That would be Miguel Cabrera, but it would be in Spanish, so it's a little tougher. I'm gonna watch baseball. I think we all for a little bit are probably gonna watch baseball just to say, but also, I don't know how you guys feel about this. People here at the station, we've been talking about it. For me, I love the game of baseball. I really do. But it's just so much harder to sit on my couch and watch it than be sitting at Comerica Park with a $30 beer and a $20 hot dog that just literally broke my credit and watch the game. So, I mean, I don't know about you, Jay, but I can only get through so many innings of baseball watching it on my TV before it's like, yeah, I just can't do this anymore. I'll wait for the box score.
No, my kids have about a 20-minute interest window of time in any event that takes place. So even if I caught 2/3 of an inning, it's off the TV because I'm probably on the other side of the house fixing something.
Yeah.
So it's not happening in this house.
Yeah, Rusty.
No, I agree with it. I'm the same way. It's a radio show. It's a radio type of sport. It's a social type of sport. You're not sitting down to watch baseball. You might put it on the back, do other things, right? Like the Friends reruns for the 15th time that we've seen. It gets on. You hear it. Occasionally you look over at it, but you know what's going to happen. Tigers are going to lose.
Well, you look at that because you know when the jokes are coming, so you know the timeout that Joey's going to figure it out 5 seconds after everybody else does. We know what's happening. And let me put it this way. I mean, for all of us, if you've listened to the show throughout the couple of years, you know that baseball doesn't get covered a lot on our show, and it's not because we don't like the game. It's just there are 160-plus games of this every year. It's impossible to just cover it unless you have an undying passion. And, I mean, I can't speak as much for Jay. I know he does love the game. Russ and I, we've talked baseball over the years. We're both baseball guys. You know, we both played to a certain extent, and then we realized that track was just a little bit better for us. But so it's a hard sport to cover all the way through. But I mean, we're going to give it 60 games seems a little more doable, guys. We might be able to do it this time around. It'll be pretty easy to just go L, 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 W, L, L, tie. Miggy has another injury and is out for the rest of the year. L, L, L. Tigers traded away the one good piece they have for a bunch of
farm system. Movie. Yeah. Don't do that.
It's the same movie. It's Groundhog Day, buddy. We live in Groundhog Day. It's just how it is.
Wait, not their one good piece. He was my favorite player.
He was their only player.
He was your tiger. He was a good campaign slogan.
He was your tiger. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, a sport that at least two of us aren't giving up on anytime soon because we watch it every week. We play it. We talk about it religiously. And that is the PGA Tour. We just wrapped the Memorial Tournament 2 weeks in a row at Muirfield Village. Jack's course. Well, interesting note, I don't know if you guys heard this. Jack actually came out and said he had COVID. He quarantined for like a month just to make sure that he could be at this, you know, be there to shake the winner's hands. I see Russ's face is a little surprised by this. He announced that him and his wife, they had it back in April. They quarantined in Florida for about a month to make sure that they could be up there. They both tested positive multiple times, but are both good. They're both clear. They're both fine. And I know we talked about it for a minute last week, but he actually did. He scrapped the handshake. He told Rom however Rom wants to do it. Rom gave him a fist bump, and Jack was totally fine with that. So I like that. He knew the moment there. But, yeah, Russ, I love the shock on Russ's face. Yeah, they had it. But, Jay, the first thing I have to ask you, because of the three of us, Russ isn't probably going to notice it as much, but you will. How different that course was over the span of those 2 weeks. First week, work day, everybody seemed to do well. That second, the Memorial, Jack had this thing to just major, major quality. Like, these guys were dying out there, and some of the best golfers in the world shot scores that I shoot on a regular basis on a Muni course. I felt pretty good about myself. I really did.
So the interesting with that is that there's kind of two sides of the story about the course. Within 4 days, going from Sunday to Thursday, the course got infinitely harder. Mm-hmm. And the proof was in the average scoring of a daily round. It was at 75.95, which is the highest round average outside of any major in the last 4 years.
That's average three over par. Sunday, it means they were averaging about three over par.
Yep. So when you go from Sunday to... Say that again?
He said, thanks for the context.
Thank you for context.
We're getting in your way, Jay. Thank Keep you. Doing what you're doing, buddy. Don't worry about us.
No, you cut me off whenever you want, big man. So between Sunday and Thursday, 4 days, that course just completely threw everything off. I've read some articles that Jack was doing some shit on purpose. Not like he's hiding in the trees making balls move on strings or something. But I texted you guys. He had, that'd be a good, 80-year-old Jack, just, I've got corona, give me your ball. Jack was making comments towards the USGA about how these people better wake up about distance on drives. And his course got infinitely harder in 4 days. He was doing, like, all the statistics are showing that people's scores were like an anomaly, and it was a difficult course. The good side to it is that the players weren't complaining about it. They actually welcomed it. They didn't mind getting challenged, but it really wasn't a good look in terms of that course flip-flopping. We talked about the idea of more places having two events on back-to-back weekends. Look what happened in this event. So it was interesting, but Jack had his name all in the news and all kinds of things, taking shots at people and his course being infinitely harder and handshakes. And it was the Jack show, in my opinion.
Well, I think when you are someone like Jack Nicklaus, that has to be taken seriously. I mean, if Wayne Gretzky walks into the, you know, the commissioner's office of the NHL and says, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, the commissioner has to look at him and go, okay, yeah, we'll talk about that. If the greatest to ever do it is giving you a statement about the game, you need to listen to it, because this is a guy who did it better than anyone else. And he could just say, don't make the game any harder on these, like, don't make it, like, make it easier for these guys. That way someone actually has a chance of catching me, you know, outside of Tiger. So it is one of those things. I don't know about you, Jay. This was just fun for me because I feel like we haven't seen it much this year. But Rom pulling away towards the end and just kind of having that comfortable lead, I kind of enjoyed it a little bit because we don't see that very often anymore. Usually it's a guy, like, there's a couple guys clawing it out to finish at the end of the week. Having a guy who, by the back nine, he knew he had won it. Let's just see, one, by how much he can win it. Or, if we're lucky, maybe we'll see him fall apart a little bit, and it really will get interesting by 17 or 18.
See, I'm a little bit of the opposite. I want playoffs. I want people tying on the 18 and pushing to a playoff and Jack Nicklaus texting the wrong champion. I want that every weekend. I told you he was a menace. I want the drama. And this is why I'm probably gravitating towards the NBA, because I like this drama. I need it. I live off of it. So give me a playoff scenario every weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so now we're going to bring Russ back in, because I feel like this is a perspective that Russ can contribute in the conversation, and I think, you know, more opinions the better. I mentioned it before the show that Jon Rahm won this tournament, and he won it without any problems. But while doing an interview after the round with the PGA's Amanda Baliones, she said, "How do you feel about the fact that your shot? He had a great chip shot. I forget on what hole it was, but he holed it out." She asked, how do you feel about the fact that shot is under review? Apparently, the ball moved. Now, I've seen it a couple times. I think it can go either way. He puts the club underneath the ball right before he's about to hit it, and the ball does shift a little, but I don't know that you can really consider it moving or if it's just the grass kind of giving way. But they ended up reviewing it. They ended up saying, ball moved. You know, we're going to assess the two-stroke penalty. It didn't do anything to him. He had enough of a lead that it didn't affect him. But I want to ask, and I'll let you go first here, Russ, I get with today's technology, we have the advantage of being able to do this, but should penalties like that be assessed post-round? Like, it's over. You had more than enough time to look at this. It wasn't like this happened on the 18th hole on the last shot. You had more than enough time to look at this to say, okay, I feel like the ball moved. Let's let him know ahead of time. Because they've done it before where they tell the guys, you know, 30 minutes later, and it ends up costing them. I look back to Jay, I think it was like the 2010 PGA. Dustin Johnson was knocked out of the playoff because he took a practice swing on what he thought was just beat down part of the property where people had been walking all day. And they decided to say, nope, that's a bunker. You grounded your club, even though it's not a bunker. It's a little dirt patch where they just didn't put enough sod down. They assessed it as a bunker. He gets hit with a two-stroke penalty. Those two strokes were enough to knock him out of the playoff where he was playing amazing golf. He probably wins the PGA that year, but he gets knocked out of the playoff with Martin Kaymer and Bubba Watson. So, Russ, they have the ability. Should they be able to do that, though?
I don't think this is going to be the last time I say this today, but just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And as a baseline, anytime you have to go, I'll just adjust my glasses. Well, actually, the rule is, as soon as you get that far, you might be working outside of the spirit of the rule here. It's, yes, we have the ability to do that. And it's things like strike zones. It's things like the catch rule in the NFL that mm-hmm. we have the ability to go and frame by frame look at this. But at the end of the day, who is that helping? Is that enhancing anyone's experience, anyone's play? Was some kind of advantage gained or taken away from this? Well, it's only been really taken away. I didn't see this in question, this play in question, but hearing you describe it, it sounds like it had no influence on anything whatsoever, but it's something ticky-tack to get him back for. If he, say, I don't know, he was in a bad spot and he goes to do this and it moves it slightly into a more advantageous position for him, yeah, ring him up. But stuff like this, what are we doing? If you don't catch it live, you can't go back and change history. It's, I love technology.
Mm-hmm.
I hate how it's being applied in some ways. Some things we need to focus on getting right. Other things you're taking away from the game.
Yeah. I feel like I can get a 60 seconds assault out of Russ, so I'm going to give him the last little bit that might push him over the end or over the edge. We've talked about the rules official doing this. Now give me your opinion on fans being the ones.
I've heard about this.
Here we go. Have you heard about Lexi Thompson and what happened? Because this one will get
Not
you.
Not specifically, all right. No.
So she's playing in a tournament a couple of years ago. She marks her ball on the green. You can mark the ball to clean it off if you want. She marks the ball. Well, the thing was, and you can mark the ball anywhere you want as long as that ball goes back to the original spot it was. So she put her ball marker kind of to the side of the ball because it kept, you know, it was just enough that it wouldn't be in the other player's line. So she marked her ball, picked the ball up, cleaned it. Other person putted. She put her ball back, but the problem was she put it in front of the coin. So if anything, she moved the ball a little forward and diagonal. No one caught it. No one noticed it. She made the putt. It was an easy little putt anyway. But she proceeded to play a couple more holes. Well, come to find out, a fan watching at home on their TV caught it and called the PGA to let them know that if they did, they needed to assess her a penalty. Not a rules official, not anyone, a fan. And they go to Lexi a couple holes later and tell her what's going to happen. She obviously gets emotional because she was in contention. She maybe wasn't, because she thought the score in her head, she wasn't maybe playing as aggressive as she would have had to had she known. She loses a couple strokes. I don't remember if she wins or loses, but it's happened multiple times now where fans will call in and say, you didn't catch this, you need to catch it. And I want, what's your opinion on, should fans really have the ability to affect the outcome of things?
So from a sports fan point of view, no, they shouldn't. This is on the rules official, and quite frankly, it's their fault that they didn't catch this.
Yep.
This whole situation should have been avoided. So that person, do your job. As an insidious kind of big marketing company, you know, trying to give viewers, it's great. Because nobody likes telling on other people other than the trolls that we see on social media. So you're going to give them an avenue to where they can actually feel important and make an impact on real-life events? Holy shit. You're going to get so many more views out of that. So, yeah, the nefarious Big Brother point of view, yeah, I get it. It's probably driving more viewers that they can do this. I think it's dumb. Okay. I think do your job, so we don't need it.
Yeah, I. You know what? We've been too long without Sergeant Salty, and we need it. Jay, you got a big bowl of things you can pick at from this one. Take what you will out of it, and let us know what you think.
Well, I think Russ did it beautifully in avoiding trying to just pile onto what he said. What I can offer, what I was thinking in my head, is the one instance where this does work, and I'm actually okay with it, is in hockey.
I was just about to point out hockey, that to me, hockey doesn't work. Like, having a fan call in and say Stamkos was offsides when no one caught it.
No, hang on. Let me be a little more specific.
All right.
When a play is going and they think the puck crossed the line, but no one catches it and the play advances,
mm-hmm.
and then once the first whistle is blown and they look at that, oh, that puck did cross the line, and they award the goal, I'm okay with that. Because there's instances where pucks do or do not cross the line, and the play continues, and no one knows what's happening. I think the Wings were, I think they benefited from one a couple of years ago when this first got introduced. But they were like, yep, here's the first stoppage. We went back. The puck did cross the line. Abdicator got his only goal for the season.
Yeah.
Like, that moment, I'm okay with that in hockey. Anywhere else, I don't need Karen calling in and telling us that this boxer did this. Like, I don't know. That's what people get paid for. That's what their job is supposed to. No one helps me with my job. No one tells me when I screw up an email and I don't type something right. Like,
I'd be happy to if you ever sent me an email. Yeah, if you ever sent me an email, I'd be happy to. All right, but playing...
I think hockey does it right.
Okay, but playing devil's advocate here. You also have the... But if you have the ability to look after to change for the worse, why don't we have the ability to look back and change for the better? I think we all know what I'm thinking at here. It's the Calvin Johnson catch. The fact that he made a catch. There was no debate about it whatsoever. He made a catch. So if you have the ability to change for the worse, why do we not have the ability to change for the better? Or even a better one. I hate to bring it up. We've gone so long without talking about it, but the Galarraga perfect game. We have the ability. We had the technology then to prove he was out by a little while. why then when that happened, why wasn't the league, why didn't they look at those guys and go, listen, I'm sorry, I know you feel like you won that, or you got that hit, but unfortunately Galarraga threw a perfect game. He gets a perfect game on the spot. Why, we're even debating this 10 years later.
It should have been handled on the spot. And if we can handle it before the ink dries, yes, fix it. My issue is, like we saw in golf, how much later after the play happened did the fan call in and they actually assessed it? A couple holes? A half hour?
Best guess that from when the play, from when the actual moment happened to when they told her about it, I would guess she probably played two or three holes, so probably close to half an hour, 45 minutes, give or take.
And with all the logistics involved with just calling, I mean, we see in hockey games how long it takes to just call Toronto, who's a dedicated office for this stuff. Like that, you can't do that in a live sport because it changes so much. So it just goes back to, yes, these were messed up things. The Galarraga thing is going to be one of the worst calls ever.
Probably, yeah.
Get it right the first time. If you want to have the technology that a paid on-field referee or just off-field can review these things in live, cool. Constantly have them looking over plays and call down, hey, 30 seconds ago this was an issue.
Yeah.
Take care of that. Right. A half hour later, after the game's done, like we can't open up sealed records.
Because
then when do you stop?
I just get too worried that, speaking of when do you stop, I just get too worried that we need to find the medium and we need to hold strong. There can't be, because the problem is, as much as I want it for certain things, I feel like it opens up the floodgates for baseball. For guys literally taking a strike three, turning around and looking and saying, challenge. There's no way that was in the strike zone. And then before you know it, what's the point of even having umpires, referees? We can just have someone who literally stares at a monitor for the entire game and puts it up as they see fit. That was technically in the strike zone. That was technically a goal. That was, so I see it, but at the same time, I feel like it's just, it opens up the floodgates unless we set the standard. But the issue is you're going to have those people who say, well, why is that the standard? Why isn't this the standard? You know what I mean? So it's tough.
Yeah. Why do we have offsides? Why do we have icing?
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to set the rules and stay by them.
Before you know it, Battle Royale is going to be a thing. It's just going to be, go out there. Happy Gilmore had it right. Just take your skate off and try to stab somebody. That's what it's going to be by the time it's over.
The final thought and the best part about all this is that the first sport that you guys watch, I hope the first play requires a replay, and you're probably going to love the hell out of it because sports are back anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, I'm gonna kind of warp the rundown here. We are going to give you our predictions for the 3M Open in Minnesota. But before we do that, because it kind of is sticking with it, speaking of the John Rahm, you know, the camera catching the ball moving, on another hole, John Rahm teed off, didn't really like where the ball was going. It didn't end up being in a terrible spot. He made a mess of the hole, but it didn't. But he's seen just slamming, two-handed slamming, like you would hit the weight at the carnival with the hammer, his driver into the ground and, you know, being upset. A couple days prior, I sent you guys a video of this. Bryson DeChambeau didn't like a ruling, didn't like what the rules official had to say, asked for another rules official, didn't like what that rules official had to say, gave him nothing but guff the whole time. I'm just using golf as the example. We know we've seen it in football, in baseball, in hockey, in basketball. We've seen it all. But I guess in today's media, everyone could be a sports journalist. I mean, look, the three of us are doing it, and that says a lot about it. But everybody's phone has a camera. Everybody, in theory, has social media. They have Twitter and Instagram presence and followers. So it's that thing of everybody really is a click away from a video going viral. So, Jay, I'll let you go first here. In today's how that is, are we holding, are players being held to a higher standard of how they have to conduct themselves because technology has changed but expectations haven't?
Initially, yes, but I think this is just our new norm because players went, in my opinion, majority of players went from using it as a personal platform for them as an individual, mm-hmm. and now it's all about business decisions. I think people use their social media accounts to push their own agendas and push their own thoughts and get involved in drama and create hype. AB the other day said he was going to retire. And the very next tweet was his next business idea that he's running with. So, like, it's capitalism more than anything. It's not personalism, if that's even a word. I just invented it, if it's not. It's capitalism now.
Personalism. TM.
It's probably not a word. But no, I don't think so anymore. Because social media is not just, you know, Justin Marcus, the person at home. If I'm an athlete, I'm this big platform and I sign shoe deals and I'm a brand. It's more capitalism than it is personal.
But don't get me wrong. I think it's to the benefit. I mean, these are the worst examples. Not worst in, like, they're bad examples. They're just the worst case of social media. You know, you look at I'm going to blank on his name now. Kareem Hunt, the incident in the hallway. You know, obviously years ago with Ray Rice. You get these videos of things we wouldn't have known about if someone hadn't been filming. Because, I mean, even with the Hunt situation, that didn't come out until months later. Like, they did what they could to keep it under the rug. So you have those instances in that. But at the same time, Russ, you also have a moment where someone's just trying to be a human or they're having a human emotion and someone caught it on camera. So now instead of that person getting their human emotion, I know the radio station doesn't seem to care about me. Instead of that person getting their human emotion and keeping it to themselves, you have someone posting a video of a guy getting upset because he hit a bad shot or getting upset because he didn't agree with the call the ref made, but some 13-year-old happened to have his iPhone 6 feet from the guy's face, and now the world knows about it and gets to weigh in.
I don't mean to say, oh, boo, suck it up, you're a multimillion-dollar athlete. However, if I can get screamed at by a 13-year-old on PlayStation Live for free, they can get paid to do it and just survive just fine. But, I mean, to your point about the video and it always being there, like Justin said, that's kind of the norm. We need to evolve with the times. Like, sports can't be this anachronism that just doesn't grow, and it's an old-timey guy in a pinstripe suit and black and white in the corner. No, it needs to grow with time. It needs to evolve with time. Jeremy Roenick came out and said, oh, yeah, we used to do all this crazy stuff. Coke, hookers, everything. Okay, counter for two today. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And just because you could get away with something before doesn't mean you should have gotten away with it then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it was a bad thing to do, now more people are like, yeah, that's a bad thing. We should not let people do that.
Yeah.
And we are evolving as a society. In the immortal words of George Costanza, we are living in a society. People are supposed to act in a civilized manner. And that's going to continue to evolve with time, what we think is civil society. Sports is a part of that. They are a function of a functioning society. You come along for the ride, or you're going to show your ass, and we're going to leave you behind, justifiably.
Well, you gave the Roenick instance, Jay. The first thing I thought about was Last Dance with Jordan literally throwing his early years teams under the bus that, like, he'd go into the, like, they'd all meet in a hotel room, and they'd go in, and it was booze in one corner, hookers in another corner, and blow in the third corner. And Jordan mm-hmm. walked in and said, yeah, this isn't for me. But the thing to me is, too, like, Jay, you kind of gave the best example. Social media has that ability to, it can be a platform just for you to get yourself out there. And, maybe you're not the most outgoing person, but you can feel like you're connecting. But it can also be for that business aspect. And I love it for that, because we use it every day for our show. We're tweeting, we're using it, we're trying to, make those connections. And it can be good for that, but it lasts forever. So when you have guys that use it the right way, it's a great tool. When you have guys like Odell Beckham who are sitting on a bed doing coke with a woman and they're trying to get a new contract, this is where you have to look and, like you said, Russ, oh, boo-hoo, you're a multimillionaire. Don't make the mistake.
Yeah, if that's not social media's fault that he's making bad decisions. It's just letting everyone know he's making bad decisions. Yeah. Don't be a garbage human being. You might be all right.
So I get how it works in some way, but I guess, Jay, I know you had a point. I want you to get to it, but in you making your point, I want to give you a little something to play off of. As the technology and how we use it changes, do the expectations of what we're going to see with that ability do the expectations have to change with it? We can't still be in the 50s where there was maybe two cameras on a golf course and a microphone that barely picked up anything but the wind. So expectations, do they have to change as the technology advances?
Yeah, always. I mean, first of all, Russ's little spiel he just went on, I'm voting Russ for president in November, so that I'm glad I can lock that into my absentee ballot. You can't just sit still. You can't sit still in one area and try to be progressive in another because you're probably shooting yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to grow. I think there's always going to be issues. I think there's always going to be some evolution of technology that hinders the fan experience. But I guarantee you on the other end of the table, the deal, the technology, the contracts, the companies, there's money moving left and right. They're fine. The people that suffer are the fans, and they're probably banking on some fans being like, whatever. And then they watch the sport and life goes on and they get their money and no one's really losing except someone on Twitter who's mad and says something.
Yeah.
So that's the ugly truth of it all, is that the money makes everyone happy except a couple people and they go, ooh, cool. The only other point I wanted to make, personalism was in the dictionary, and it's a real word.
All right, personalism.
Which means?
Whoa. Oh, shoot. I just answered myself. That was weird in itself.
You looked it up personalism, to confirm that it's a word, but not the definition of it?
The quality of personal, especially a theory or system based on subjective ideas or application.
All right, so how did he use personalism and did he use it right?
Can I get a country of origin?
Stanford Encyclopedia.
So California.
Not a country. Cool.
California.
Still not a country.
The People's Republic of California back in Santa Ana's days. I got you.
Narnia.
Oh,
all right.
Like I teased in the start of the show, we got a couple fun things we want to do. Before we do that, it's kind of become the tradition. I hope it doesn't go anywhere, but with sports coming back, we have old topics we usually cover, so it might fade away, but for right now, we're going to keep it going as long as we can. 3M Open this week in Minnesota. Former champion is Matt Wolf, who Justin loves because of his crazy wonky golf swing and the fact that he leans his putter a little forward right before he hits it. Guys, I sent you earlier in the week the pairings, the groupings. I really wish, and this is on me, I probably should have been keeping track of who's been doing the best on these, but unfortunately we're not doing that. We're just doing this for fun. So I want to ask you guys, and Rush, you can go first here, because we might as well get the fun poem out of the way. Who are you picking for your top pairing to finish at the 3M Open this week?
Okay, so first off, I didn't know he's a former champ, so that was lucky. But the bottom line is, it's a 3M tournament. So you got to pick the group that actually has 3 M's in their name, right? Like, this seems pretty straightforward. Brandon Grace, Matt Wolf, Max Homa. Plus, sent him a sound, I'm lost and I'm found. And I'm Homa like the wolf.
Oh, God.
I love it. I knew as soon as you said 3M, I was like, oh, fuck, you picked people with M's in their name.
Yeah. Well, and also, I sent this to you guys in the text. It's a little shout-out to him. If you don't follow Max Homa, he's absolutely worth the follow. Because pro golfer, great guy, but somehow it got started that amateurs and pro golfers would send him videos of their golf swings for him to critique. But the thing is, he critiques them in the most savage ways possible. Just absolutely makes fun of these people. And these are like people like Tiger Woods and, I mean, these two haven't, but Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson-esque players sending them, and he messes with them. And this is a guy who's just trying to make it on tour. So if you haven't followed, it's kind of funny just to see his responses to these things. It's a good time. But, as soon as I should have saw that 3M coming. I don't know how I missed it, Jay. Over to you. I know your analysis is going to be far more in depth. Who are you taking for the 3M Open?
The only time where I sound a little bit smarter than Russ. Normally he's got that on me. But this might be the only time. But I do love his creativity, because I'm the one for making nonsense happen.
Absolutely. We're going to see that here in about 5 minutes.
I appreciate you, buddy. Oh, that is very true. I'm about to show my ass, like Russ said. I'm taking the group of Fleetwood, DJ, and can I get a pronunciation of Tony? Is it Finau?
Finau.
Finau. Finau. Yeah. Thank you.
Finau.
Tony.
Phenom.
Phenom the Phenom. Yep, pretty much.
Well, he has been a phenom because he has 24 top eight finishes in the last four seasons right now, which is the most among any player in the PGA. So I'm going with Tony. Fleetwood, this is his first game of the year, basically. He hasn't played since March, so he's coming back. I think he's over the pond, so flying over, traveling. Now he gets to come compete.
From England,
DJ was, like, the only part of my team. Like, we're about to do a segment called Start, Bench, Cut. I would like to cut DJ from my pairing. He's been wildly inaccurate this year. He's only has three finishes within the top ten, and he's got just as many cuts from tournaments as he has top ten finishes. So, DJ, I'm going to cut. I'm going to start Finau, and Fleetwood's on my team. He hasn't played yet, so he's healthy. So that's my squad for the weekend.
Absolutely. Finau is a phenom. I know, Jay, you and I have talked about it a million times. This is a guy who every year during the Masters, the day before the Masters, they do a par 3 challenge. And it's a lot of fun. Everybody does it. The only taboo is you don't want to win it. No one has ever won the par 3 challenge and then won the Masters. It's never happened. So you don't want to win it. A lot of times there will be guys who have the lead on the 18th par 3, and they'll hit it in the water on purpose just so that they don't win it. Well, Tony Finau made a hole-in-one, and he ran to celebrate. And as he was running down, he tripped, and he dislocated his ankle. He popped his ankle back into place. They show him.
I remember this.
But this is why he's a phenom. The man had a dislocated ankle. They showed it a couple days later. He couldn't wear anything but high tops because he couldn't bend his ankle. He finished in the top five in the Masters that week, having to recreate his entire swing because he couldn't put weight on one of his feet. Having to recreate it and rework it, he finished in the top five in the Masters after dislocating his ankle. If that's not a phenom, I don't know what is. That guy's just meant to be. Great golfer, and he absolutely crushes the ball.
Nuts.
Yeah. Mine I decided to have a little fun with. I went with the grouping of Paul Casey, Bubba Watson, and Pat Perez. For no reason other than I think you could legitimately just stick a microphone in between Bubba Watson and Pat Perez for 18 holes, and you'd get the greatest show on earth. These two are anything but orthodox. Bubba Watson has quoted as saying he's never had a lesson. He just goes out there, tees it up, and swings. He says the idea of a ball going straight confuses him. He wants to see it turn. He wants to see it bend. Just a great, fun guy. And Pat Perez is the living John Daly of our tour right now. This man is a crazy person. Doesn't care what he says. Showed up to do the Tiger Phil match a couple years ago in a red blazer and told him he's going to party after this, so he might as well just show up dressed. The man is just a fun time. I love watching Pat Perez. Unfortunately, he doesn't play a ton on the tour lately. He's had some injuries. So I already have them all. Those two starred. I want to watch it. It's going to be great, Jay.
One quick note on Pat Perez. My favorite video of him is him crushing bombs in someone's backyard in the middle of a thunderstorm. Like, it's torrential downpour, and he's just going driver into a neighborhood just because.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Pat Perez is just the greatest. Like, he is legitimately a rock star playing golf. It's fun to watch. So we'll see how that goes. And obviously with sports coming back, we're going to try to keep this one going for as long as we can. We've got the majors coming up. I think that's about the only time of the year that Russ actually does a little looking because it's the majors. But let's be honest, we're still going to get a great poem out of it no matter what.
He'll find someone parent that was like in the military and he was a major, so now that's what he's going to pick.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ooh. That's a great idea.
Oh, okay. Well, Jay, you just gave him an idea. All right, well, earlier in the week, scrolling through Twitter, found a little picture that it said start, bench, and cut. And it had pictures of Dominic Hasek, Patrick Waugh, and Martin Brodeur. Really hard to pick, but I sent it to these two and said, give me your choices. And it just made me think. We talk about sports left and right. We have the debates on who's better. Is this guy that good? So I thought, let's put it to the test. No one knows like who has what. They're all going to be random. They're all going to just be for the fun. But we figured, let's play start, bench, cut. And believe me, knowing this group, one or two of them are going to be serious, but the rest are just going to be, let's see how messed up we can get. With that being said, first round of start bench cut. We're just going to go and rotate. Everybody, you throw up one, next person goes. So, Jay, I'll let you go first, followed by Russ, and then I'll take one. So, Jay, your first choice for start bench cut.
All right, and then we're going to take turns like saying who we would.
Yep.
All right, perfect. I'll start off easy. I'm not going to bring my Heat, my Miami Heat at first. I'm just going to start with a softball here. My first one, that's the only way I was going to work it in. Steve Ott, Sean Avery, Brad Marchand.
Ugh.
They're all assholes.
Steve Ott, Sean Avery, okay. Brad Marchand. Okay. All
right. So do I go first because I'm next in the order?
Yep.
Okay, so cut Avery. cut him in the middle of a bike lane, if you can.
Yes.
Start Marchand because he actually has a lot of offensive skill. And then bench Steve Ott because he used to be in on the bench. He's now a coach. Yeah.
All right. Nicely done. Cut Avery. I don't think that's even one we have to think about. Cut Avery. I'm going to flip it, though. I'm going to start Ott because if Marchand's on the ice, or if he's on the bench, he's less likely to be licking people, and we're not going to spread this virus. So Steve Ott can play, and it's okay. I can live with it. Plus, yeah, I'm good with that. As long as Avery, like Russ said, as long as he gets cut off in a bike lane, I'm good with it.
All right, so to wrap out my segment on this first one, I'm also cutting Sean Avery because he's just a horrible human. Brad Marchand is being benched, and I'm starting Steve Ott only because someone has to be really good at faceoffs and be cocky about it at the same time. He is known for rubbing in other people's faces about what his faceoff percentage is. I love that kind of attitude, so Ott would start.
I love it.
When you're good at one thing...
You let people know. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. I like that one. Rusty, on to you.
Okay. You know what? I won't start with my Heat either. We'll actually do a Detroit sports relevant one. And Jay got to start out on hockey, so I'll keep that going. This is the post-Scotty Bowman edition. Red Wings head coaches Dave Lewis, mustache included, Mike Babcock, and Jeff Blashill. The only coaches the Wings have had post-Scotty, by the way.
Yep. I cut Blashill because I've said since the beginning, I think an NHL franchise was a little bit above his level when he came in, and he wasn't given the best options, doing it. Lewis can go to the bench because he spent a lot of time on the bench with Scotty anyway, so he's comfortable there. And listen, for as much of an asshat as this guy appears to be in what we're hearing, he wins. He had a pretty successful career in Detroit. You know, should have gotten him back-to-back titles. Jay, don't think about it, and it won't hurt you. So I'm gonna start Babcock. It's really hard to say, but I am going to start Babcock. So start Babcock, bench Lewis, cut Blashill, Jay.
All right. Blashill is going to have to be my bench, just because he did win with the Griffins. He's got a championship with some of the younger talent. I'm okay with Blash being mediocre early on the bench because that's what he's good at right now. The other two, man, my disdain for Babcock is huge. Like, I loathe him in many ways. But between him and Dave Lewis, I almost have to start him and then cut Dave Lewis. I just remember being a kid. He had a mustache. He followed Bowman. It wasn't the greatest of times. I've had more positive times with Babcock than I have with Lewis. So Bab start, Blash on the bench, and mustache out the door.
Wow, that took a turn at the end I wasn't expecting. To wrap it up, I'm also cutting Blashill, better as a minor league coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm benching Mike Babcock with the assignment that he has to then rank all of his teammates in terms of effort and how much they want it, and turn that in, and he has to stay on the bench until he does. And then I'm going to start Dave Lewis, who actually has the highest winning percentage out of all those guys as a Red Wings coach.
Yeah, but you coached for what, 2-3 years?
200-something games, so yeah, something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Still a number. But
I'm just saying.
I'll take the mustache, man.
Babcock was in Detroit for a decade, and of course he was there for the ups, but then he also really helped them go all the way down, so it's just kind of...
Yeah. I know. Well, and if he wasn't such a jackass, he might get the start, but I want him on the bench so I can...
Give him
good sound sexual. I want him there so I could punish him.
Yeah, baby. That better be a drop.
I will make sure I have that as a drop. All right, I'm going to lead off. This is simple. It's a softball. There's no wrong answer here unless you give me the wrong answer. So this is easy. Jay, this is...
So like a normal question,
yeah,
then.
This is easy. All right?
And I'm going to fuck it up.
Only one Detroit connection here, but I went with the best that are available. Kind of like the picture. Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Barry Sanders.
Jim Brown gets cut. Barry Sanders starts, and I'm putting. I don't want to say that he's on the bench. Ah, fuck! I don't like this one. This one's got a nasty taste to it. I'm going with the hometown with Sanders, and then Jim Brown's a cut, and Peyton's on the bench.
Ugh. It hurts. It's tough.
I don't like this. I don't like myself right
it's
now.
Tough.
Like
it's tough. It's tough. Russ.
So I'm gonna start Barry because I'm biased, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I struggle because Walter Payton was a Bear.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm going to have to bench him. Jim Brown had a shorter career, so I'll say, hey, I'll cut him. I don't feel good about cutting Jim Brown, but played for the Browns. He's used to disappointment, so sorry. Yeah, I'll start Barry, bench Walter Payton, cut Jim Brown.
Okay. Unanimous start Barry. I don't think any of us were going to say anything other than that. I bench Jim Brown because if I have Barry Sanders playing, you're kind of getting that fire and ice. You can beat him outside, let him scramble around and have some fun, or you can just truck it right up the middle. But Jim Brown was also very fast. So, listen, if he wasn't a Bear, I think it'd be really hard to say Walter Payton isn't a starter in this. But he played for the Bears. Still second greatest running back to ever play the game of football behind Barry Sanders. But unfortunately, he's getting cut, and he can go play for Chicago, where he likes to be. So start Barry, bench Jim, cut Walter Payton. I agree, Jay. It leaves a bad taste in your mouth because you're cutting a Hall of Famer like no matter what you do. All right, Jay, second round.
All right, let's make some more bad people go out the window, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The next one we're going to do is going to be a fun one. This is actually in the rules. All right. Still sports. You can still get rid of someone. Someone can still sit there and someone can take the lead. I need to know who those people are going to be for Mike Tirico, Dan Patrick, and Pat McAfee. So we're doing broadcasting, but again, Mike Tirico, Michigan native, Dan Patrick, hell of a career with a guy, and Pat McAfee just getting started.
Okay. All right. Rusty?
Whoa. All right. I'll get the easy one out of the way. I'm starting Tirico. He's always got nice things to say about Detroit, and I appreciate that.
It's because he lives in Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Also a city I happen to like and also reside in.
I'm a pretty fan of that one.
Yeah. So Dan Patrick, Pat McAfee. You know what? I'm going to do Patrick the honor of cutting him so he can go get gainful employment somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because he deserves it. I'm going to bench Pat McAfee so he can be a role player for me, so he can jump in with some crazy comment every now and then and leave everything else to Tirico.
Like I'm right there with you, Tirico. It's Tirico. There's one name. There's only one name you could have put on here, Jay, that would have made it any harder, and that's Jim Nance. But Mike Tirico, he's playing. He's always playing. He's our starter. Same reason. I love Dan Patrick. He's one of my favorite. I listen to his show as often as I can. I think the guy is an absolute rock star. But he's a guy who he finds his element and he works it perfectly. And aside from his show, he is a solo act. He's a guy that does it on his own. Pat McAfee just plays off of everyone. He give 5 minutes with him. He can figure out your speed, and he's playing with it perfectly. So put Pat McAfee on the bench. It's great to have him. Mike Tirico's the starter, and I'll still follow you, Dan Patrick. It just won't be at wherever I am.
The only twist in mind is I'm actually getting rid of McAfee, even though he is electric, and I love the way he approaches everything. Tirico's my number one, and Dan Patrick's my number two. I go with my legend that got me into sports before the new one that's just upcoming. Some other younger kid could take McAfee. He's out.
Okay.
Fair.
That's all I got.
All right, screw it. Let's have some fun.
Yes.
No more hard choices. All right, so the first one is Josh Allen. The second one is Josh Allen. The third one is Josh Allen. All right, pause for effect. Josh Allen, Bills quarterback. Josh Allen, Jags edge rusher. Josh Allen, Tampa Bay Buccaneers former center.
Yep. come on. Josh Allen, former center, going to get cut. Josh Allen, edge rusher, going on the bench. Josh Allen, quarterback, starting, because I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it, even though they made a signing, Josh Allen is the best quarterback in that division right now.
Ooh.
Sam Darnold, right. Cam Newton, and Tua Tagovailoa, or whoever Miami wants to start, because it's not going to be Rosen. They have to trade him now. 2 years in a row, he's going to be on another team.
As is tradition.
Josh Allen's starting quarterback is my starter.
Well, I'm going to have to cut Josh Allen. I have to start Josh Allen. I haven't seen the other two Josh Allens play football, which is bad for someone who's doing a sports podcast. So my correct answer is Josh Allen applied to everything, but I'm starting the quarterback because he's a beast. And that's the only person I've watched play, so...
Okay, I like it.
Full transparency.
Well, I'm gonna start one of the Josh Allens you haven't seen, the edge rusher. I think he was a viable candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year, and one of the best young edge rushers out there. Josh Allen, the quarterback, can be good. I need to see a little bit more. Right now, he seems like young Cam Newton to me, based on his tendencies, his deep throw rate percentage, things like that. Keep him on the roster. Let him marinate. Other Josh Allen, like, dude played 3 games in 2014 and that was it. Yeah, you're cut. You're used to it. Sorry.
All right.
So we all had the same answer.
Yeah, Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
Yeah, we agree. This is good.
All right. Like I said, I've got a couple that there's no winning and I want to get to those, but as I'm looking over this, I have more than I need, but there are two that I absolutely have to get to. So I'm going to go above the two or three, but there are two I have to get to. This is another one where, again, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong here. I went baseball because, we barely, very rarely talk baseball. So every one of these guys in their prime, no injuries, no problems, because the first two had a lot of injuries in their career, but they're still the greatest to ever do it. Your Tigers have a fantasy draft. You get all these players. You have to decide, who is your starting center fielder? Mickey Mantle, Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout. But as a caveat, because I can't leave him out because he is arguably the greatest, Russ, I'm going to add a fourth to that. So you got to cut two. Willie Mays.
Oh, I was afraid you were going to say Willie Mays.
So, Jay, you're starting your thing. You got to have a bench player and a starter. You got to cut two. Who's your starting center fielder?
Ken Griffey.
Okay.
He's starting for me. Willie Mays bench, Mickey Mantle bench, Trout out.
All right. That's like I said, there's no wrong, but it's the same as the running backs. You have a bad taste no matter what you do here. So
yeah, I like fish. You know, just get rid of it. That's the problem.
Rusty.
I hate you. God, this is miserable. This is where my thought process is. I'm literally at the point where I'm going, well, humans are more athletic now than they were back in the day, so if I try and move them there, Trout's naturally going to be more gifted than Willie Mays. But
try to make the argument that Mike Trout is more athletic or gifted than Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays. Exactly. Try to make that argument.
I'm going to pretend you said Willie Mays Hayes.
Wesley Snipes.
Yes, which makes this only moderately simpler. You know what? I'm less emotionally attached to Trout, so I guess I'll cut him. I'm going to cut Mantle too for being a Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start Mays, and I'm going to keep Griffey on the bench because Griffey has to be on the roster. Griffey made backwards hats cool, even though they weren't for like 99% of the rest of us.
No. Says the guy who's wearing a backwards hat right now.
Yeah, and it looks not cool. I'm telling you.
You got hair poking out, bro. All right, no. I knew this one was a no-win situation because it is so tough. Willie Mays made that over-the-shoulder wide receiver catch look cool.
Unreal.
Until your dad told you to stop frickin' trying to do that in a South Farmington Little League game.
On pop-ups to third base.
On pop-ups to third base. Cutting Trout. Love Mike Trout. I think he's an amazing talent. But when you put those other three names in there, he just can't compete right now. I've made the argument for years. I think if he didn't get hurt, and we're taking the injuries out of this, I think he didn't get hurt. Ken Griffey Jr. probably would have been the greatest center fielder and probably the greatest hitter we ever saw. This guy could do nothing wrong on a baseball diamond. So for that reason, he's starting. Ken Griffey Jr. is my starter. And then, oh God. I grew up listening to my grandpa preach about Mickey Mantle and how amazing he was. But Willie Mays is just better. For the defense he gives me, Willie Mays, I have to cut Mickey Mantle even though I don't want to. So that'd be my choice.
Okay.
Jay?
Nicely done. All right, so we'll make it a little easier because that was probably the most difficult one you've thrown out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a softball. You ready?
Yep.
Rod Allen, Mario Mpemba, and the chair they fought over.
Start the chair.
Start the chair.
All right, I'm just joking. I wanted to do that one because that was funny. Here's an honest one. I'm staying in the booth today. Sorry, boys. Osgood, Mickey Redmond, and Ken Daniels, because those are the three people that we watch on most nights. And you got to pick between a lot of legends in the room.
Okay. This is tough. I'm going to bench Osgood because he's used to sitting on the bench and half his career doing it.
Yep.
Still very good. Not knocking the guy. He had a long career. I guess I'll start Ken Daniels because he's a professional. I'm going to cut Mickey because, well, Mickey's getting long in the tooth, and I think he could take the cut more gracefully than the other two. Plus, there are definitely some times where you go, what did Mickey just say? And I got to get him out of the booth before he says something that he really, really shouldn't.
Yeah.
So it stings, but I'll cut Mickey.
I'm going to start Ken Daniels because I challenge anyone to tell me a more recognizable Detroit sports voice than Ken Daniels. So starting Ken Daniels. I'm cutting Ozzie because, well, I don't want to hear him. I just don't. And if he's on the bench, there's a chance I have to hear him. And I'm going to bench Mickey because it means Mickey's still going to talk, but also because I love, like you said, Mickey's getting a little long in the tooth, but he's also getting a little out into left field. I love listening to Ken Daniels find ways to make sense of what Mickey just said. It's almost like mental test for Ken that he doesn't just drift off. He's got to pay attention and work through and try to make sense of Mickey Redmond's soda pop rants. So, bench Mickey.
Yeah, I'm running the same with you. Osgood is not good at broadcasting.
No.
Russ, for your counter of the day, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mickey probably will go out kind of like Don Cherry style. Like, he'll say some dumb shit, and you shouldn't have done it just because you could. That's number three for the day. And I'm Ken Daniels. Just everything about him off the ice, in the booth, I guess, out the booth, that's a little more appropriate. He is Detroit sports for me as well. So
yeah.
I thought that was a fun one.
Met the man, one of the nicest guys. Couldn't get two words out to him, but one of the nicest guys. Absolutely great.
Absolutely. Everything he does with the Jamie Daniels Fund, like, absolutely. Dude's just a top notch.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Okay. I got to squeeze this one in because I don't know how many more we're going to do, but I know I got to do this one because I got to try and get Eric in trouble. That's your warning.
Yes.
We're going grind line, baby. Chris Draper, Darren McCarty, Kirk Mulpey.
Oh. Okay.
This is easy. This is absolutely easy. Cut Mulpey. That's not even tough. Cut Mulpey. And since I know the other two, Chris is a nice guy. He was fun to talk to. So he's going to be understanding that I'm putting him on the bench. And listen, I'm going to use the man's intro that he does every week. Four-time Stanley Cup legend Darren McCarty, absolutely starting for me because guess what? It's our best chance in current Red Wing hockey to see someone fight. So I'm taking D-Mac, cutting Maltby, benching Draper.
Well, the Maltby part's easy for me because he rode the fourth line longer than any old-time Red Wing player ever. Like, he needed to get off that fourth line a long time ago. So sorry, Kurt, he's out. I don't know what's more important to me, the fact that Chris Draper getting his face basically sewn back together to create the biggest rivalry in sports, or Darren McCarty making Ron Hextall look like an idiot on a breakaway he had no business scoring on. I'm going to bench Darren McCarty and keep Draper just because of what Draper created with the abs. He doesn't get his face buckled in. That doesn't happen, and that's the best thing that's ever happened in sports. So,
I think it Draper happens. Starts. I think it happens. I just don't think it happens at the escalation that we saw. I think it becomes a lot more drawn out. Like it would have reached that point, but it wouldn't have reached that point in the speed it did.
Yeah,
would be my way of saying it.
But then also that made Darren McCarty who he was. Oh, so Draper's got to start to have McCarty come off a bench to go sit on another one for 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yep, we got the turtle because of it. All right, I'll finish it out. I'm also cutting Maltby. Sorry, dude. I'm going to start Draper because in addition to being a four-time Stanley Cup legend like Mr. McCarty, he also won a Selkie. He's perpetrated as this, like, third line grinder, but dude won. He got recognition as the best defensive forward in hockey one year.
Yeah.
He got votes, I think, like four different years. I'm going to keep McCarty on the bench still. Need him on the roster. Need him to go score a random ass breakaway goal to clinch the Stanley Cup final because that was one of the greatest moments of Detroit sports. But I got to go with Draper as my starter.
Okay. You know, you could have made this a lot tougher if you had taken out Maltby and stuck Joey Kosher in there. Joey Kosher.
I realized that after I said
it. Because I have heard Max say multiple times, Joey Kosher was the one person he hated fighting the most.
Yeah.
Because apparently...
Why would you like it?
Well, no, I'm just saying, because, like, for everybody that said, oh, it had to be Proby. Proby was just... apparently Joey Kosher could really, like, knock him back. So, okay. Like I said, I have my two no wins, but this is the one I have to get in, because this one incorporates everything. This goes all the way from our childhood, you know, to present day. Instead of a single player, these are pairings. Pairings that it's really hard to mention one without the other. So you got
peanut butter and jelly.
Yep.
Starting.
You got to start one, cut one, and bench one. Jay, your choices are Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker, famous second baseman, shortstop for the Tigers for years and years, Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas, or the Euro twins, Zetti and Pav.
Man, Zetti's left like a nasty taste in my mouth, so I don't know why. I got a problem with him. man. Dumars and Isaiah are going to be my bench.
Okay.
Tram and Whitaker are going to be my cut, and I'll keep Pav and Z, because just I think Datsyuk is the superior athlete across all of those people. The things that Datsyuk did is just it's the reason why he's the magic man. It's magical what he does. None of those people were magic. Datsyuk was.
Okay. Yeah, see, I knew Russ. This was the one that I thought could really get after Russ, because I if I'm guessing, Dumars and Isaiah are getting cut, and he's having a hard time deciding if he wants to give up on baseball for the Euro twins.
No, I'm going to actually start Dumars and Isaiah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, shocker. Because here's how I went through this. Can I grab the best player to ever play for the franchise? Kevin Hank, I can't.
No.
Shaman Whitaker, probably can't. The right. Cobb exists.
Well, Al Kaline, yeah.
Or not.
It makes it tough.
Yeah, and Al Kaline. Yeah, we have other ones.
Okay.
Dumars and Isaiah. Like, Isaiah, probably the best person to ever wear the jersey.
Ben Wallace.
Okay, I'll double down on my statement.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, I'll start them. I'll bench Pav and Hank because that was, geez, so much of why I'm a hockey fan and hockey that I love is because of them. And then I'm going to cut Tram and Whitaker, and I'm going to dodge rotten fruit from any fan of the Tigers from the 84 World Series because they're coming for me now.
Oh, absolutely.
Good job.
Unfortunately, I have to do this because a lot of this is tied to the upbringing. I grew up listening to my dad and my grandpa and my uncles all talking about. It's an absolute problem that Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker are not in the Hall of Fame. Now, obviously, they're working to correct that. They're working to correct that. And my dad growing up telling me how Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars are the greatest backcourt ever. They were amazing together. It was great. So for that, I am cutting the Euro twins. I'm cutting Babs and Zeddy for that exact reason. We had better pairings in Detroit in hockey. We had multiple better pairings. You can't say we've ever had a better shortstop second baseman combination. And you can't say the only backcourt that can be argued is Chauncey and Rip. And it's a tough argument, but in the end of the day, Isaiah and Joe Dumars win out on that. So I'm starting Tram and Lou, and I'm benching Dumars and Isaiah Thomas, cutting the Euro twins.
Damn. I should have done that too. All right. I got my one last one. I got two left, but I don't know how long we're going on this, but I got one. We're coming back home to Detroit.
Okay.
Just like we did with your last one too. But you have to decide between Eric Ebron, Jonathan Erickson, and Andre Drummond. Because they've been more of the modern pain in the asses on their respective teams.
Okay.
So Eric Ebron, Jonathan Erickson, Andre Drummond.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. I'm going to start Drummond, and I'm not going to feel great about it, but of all of these tall, lanky, dropping whatever they're holding all the damn time guys, I feel like he's the one that could be the most effective relative to his peers at his position. So I'll start Drummond. I'm going to bench Ebron because as long as it's, we'll pull the same thing from the replacements. We'll just dip his hands in goo, right? So he's got a chance. that's all I got. Maybe he can sit on the bench and he can tweet. Like, he gets a lot of attention that way. And then I'm going to cut Erickson because that's been the start of every Red Wings fan fiction that I've written for the last 3 years has been, and then I cut Jonathan Erickson. So I'll live out that fantasy here.
Okay. All right. I'm going to keep Drummond for that exact same reason. Of the three, I feel like he's the only one that really could play the position he was put into play. Maybe not as great as we wanted him to, but listen, the guy averaged a double-double while he was in Detroit. So that's saying something. I'm going to cut Ebron because it's fucking Eric Ebron and we could have had Odell Beckham or Aaron Donald. So if we cut him, it hurts a little less. And then I'm going to bench Erickson, one, because he's on the bench, so he can't hurt me. But two, I feel like he at least could play a position in the NHL. I don't feel like Ebron can. So that was my thinking.
Nice. All right, to wrap it up, I'm going to start Ebron.
Cool.
Only for the mere fact that I hope our team is absolute shit, so he can be on a shit team and he can drop shit passes. And then he can come down off his little pink pedestal that he's on because he thinks he's perfect now. He plays for, his third team? Is it the Steelers now? He's taking unsolicited shots at Detroit fans still. And I want to bring him back home. I want to put him on a shitty team and have him deal with some shit. So some more torture. Just like putting Dave Lewis on the bench, Russ. You want to torture him?
Yeah.
I want to torture Ebron.
I want to torture Babcock. But you want him here to punish him.
Yes, I do. I want Eric Ebron to start. And then I am going to cut Erickson and keep Andre Drummond around because I think he, like you guys, he actually has abilities. You have to put them together sometimes. It's crazy, but I just want to torture Ebron just a little bit.
Absolutely.
That's fair. Okay. So for this one, it's not quite the pairings that Eric did, but I am pairing their playing career with their post-playing career. And they were looking at their time with the Detroit franchises that they played with. We got Steve Yzerman. We got Joe Dumars. We got Alan Trammell. Both as a player and as either a manager or front office executive.
This is so easy. This is so easy. Trammell is cut, gone, see you later. You're a legend here, but you know what? Cut, gone, see you later. I'm benching Dumars because means he's around and he can still contribute. And he did enough in his career, both playing, obviously, and in the short time after, to prove he could build a winner. And I'm starting Stevie because it means everything that Stevie does, we get to see the result of, and I still believe Yzerman's going to figure out and do it. Plus, it's the captain. If you want to have a leader, might as well start the captain. So, yeah, that would be my call.
I'm partial to not even starting Yzerman, though, because his story is not over yet. It's hope. It's not a success yet. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to put Yzerman on my bench. I'm going to start Dumars and Trammell's out the door, which was expected.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, that stings that we're all going to cut Trammell, huh? But yeah, I'm going to cut Trammell. I think that's the second time I've cut Trammell in the last 5 minutes. Yikes.
Rude.
I'm going to also start Steve Yzerman, right? He's got four cups, one in the front office. Dumars only has three championships, including the one that he got as team president. So yeah, I'll start Stevie, I'll bench Joe, I'll cut Alan Trammell.
You don't have a number three Tigers jersey hanging in your closet, do you, Russ?
No, it would probably jump out and strangle me probably. If I did.
Probably. All right, here we go. Time for some no-win situations here. This one's going to be real quick. I'll do both mine, but this one's going to be real quick because Jay already mentioned one of the guys. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't do this one. So you have to start one, you have to bench one, you have to cut, which means two of these guys have to stay on your team. Eric Ebron, Joey Harrington, Charles Rogers.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. I love the two of them play together.
Oh, that's not nice.
I picked the worst three draft picks we've made since we have started paying attention to Detroit Lions football.
Third one was Charles Rogers, correct?
Charles Rogers, Joey Harrington, Eric Ebron.
Rogers is cut. Even though I don't like, I shouldn't make fun of his name. Like, he's probably a nice person, but Joey was like the softest quarterback name I've ever heard of. So he sucked. It didn't help him. I'm gonna stay consistent. Damn it! I'm gonna bench Joey Harrington and I'm starting Eric Ebron to put his face in a shitty franchise.
All right,
I'm Rusty. Committed.
Rusty.
I'm gonna start Eric Ebron.
Oh, Eric.
Honestly, you look at these three. He was the best draft pick of the three, and I got to say that today. So that's the thing now. I'm gonna bench Joey because I'm gonna talk to him about his relative, I believe, Padraig Harrington,
mm-hmm.
and try to understand why you two keep trying to get me to like golf. See if he can help me with that transition.
Okay.
And then I'm going to cut Charles Rogers so he can get sent to like rehab and stop hurting himself.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's plus he's a Spartan, so
yeah, that hurts him. That
hurts
him. I am going to cut Charles Rogers. I don't think that one was hard to figure out. I'm going to bench Ebron, and I'm gonna start Joey because if I'm starting Joey in this time, he actually has people of talent to throw the ball to. So there's a chance he might not actually be that terrible. But exactly. We don't know. We don't want to know.
That's what happens when the Lions started Joey Harrington, too. They just put their hands up like, ah.
All right. Now, here's the one, and then we wanted to get to play of the week real quick. So here's the one that I think is going to kill all three of us, because this really is a no-win. Because no matter what we do, we're going to the bottom of the barrel. Now, you have to suspend reality because one of these people actually isn't here anymore, but we're going to make him here for the case. Al Avila, Ken Holland, or the Ford family?
They all get cut. Done. We'll bench Al Avila until we figure out how to pronounce his last name, because I swear to God, I've heard five different people tell me how it's actually pronounced. Oliva, oil, olive, olive, I don't know. We got to figure him out. The Ford family, I drive a Ford. Russ got his college degree from there. It's kind of difficult. There's a little conflict of interest.
The weirdest joke.
Ken Holland, he gets cut. And I'll stick with the Fords for the time being.
Okay.
But mind you, I'm cutting a master builder. What did he get nominated for? We haven't finished doing it yet. Yeah. Architect.
So I'm contractually obligated to start the Ford family because they signed my paycheck.
he got a little pop-up on his computer as soon as I asked this question. It's the one time Martha took the sunglasses off was to glare at him.
I'm gonna start the Ford family. I'm gonna bench Ken Holland because I think he did some of his best work from the front office equivalent of a bench, mm-hmm. right? As a scout, right? He did a lot of the stuff that got the Russian Five over here. So put him in that role. And then I'm gonna cut Avila, and then he'll go resurface with his son wherever they are, and they can continue that pairing on and be happy. And I really haven't seen him bring in the talent and find guys. Like, for everything we give Dombrowski shit for, like, he found guys like J.D. Martinez off the scrap heap, and now the guy's getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, yeah. I've seen exactly none of that from Avila, and that's exactly what you need in a rebuild. So, yeah, he's cut.
Because Russ is contractually obligated and Justin owns one, I will keep the Fords because, you know what? They've proven they're willing to spend money on things we don't really need, so maybe eventually they'll spend money on something we actually do need.
Were you in my meeting earlier?
Possibly. don't double check your phone for bugs or anything. I'm going to bench Ken Holland for the reason that, kind of like Russ said, of the two options I have left, Ken Holland has at least proven he knows how to attempt to create a winner and can have success for a little while. Al Avila hasn't shown me that yet, or probably never will. So I'm going to bench Ken Holland, cut Al Avila. So that's where we're sitting with that. That was start, bench, and cut. It was very painful and took us through a lot of bad memories, but hey, some good ones. This was Jay's idea, so to wrap up the show, Jay, you're going to give it to us. It's the first time we've been able to do it in a couple months, but I'm excited to bring it back, and I'm interested to see what you consider a play when there are no sports going on. So it's back after a couple months off. Play of the week. First one is Justin Marcus.
So we're not going to have any, like, broadcast booth recording to couple with my play of the week. I don't think anywhere else might have it.
I don't think any of those are.
Mario and Rod fought again?
Say that again?
I said Mario and Rod fought again?
My play of the week is the Amazon $30 chair. My play of the week is going to be the consistent notion of the NHL dodging the ability to report actual evidence. Most players, when they get hurt in the playoffs, they either have an upper or lower body injury. And that's it. They don't specify anything. A guy wins a cup, he says he broke 7 toes and 13 fingers. You figure that one out. And it wasn't upper or lower because it was everything. That, Russ, the look on your face is... It's just a couple extra thumbs.
Got it.
Unfit to participate is bullshit. And I don't think it's fair that that's what they get to deem. Someone could just sneeze. Someone could have a family thing going on. Oh, I'm unfit to participate. Be transparent. This is my play of the week. It's really my rant of the week, but it's also my play of the week because the NHL has done this consistently. So they're consistently shitty, and it's my play of the week.
I like it. It's a great play. It's a play that we need to look at and dissect because there are some serious problems. Russ, we've clearly widened the spectrum of what you can call a play.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, in this new parameter we have, what is your play of the week?
I love this brave new world. I thought play of the week was supposed to be a good thing that we saw. That's what I assumed. So to be clear, this is my good play of the week.
Good play of the week.
It's not exactly a play, but it did happen on the field. And it is Alyssa Nacken being the first woman to be an on-field coach in Major League Baseball. The Giants brought her on. Players also kneeled during the anthem, so +2 for the Giants. And that finally lets me move on from the 2012 sweep of the Tigers that the Giants shattered my childhood on, well, teenagehood on. And plus, I know it pissed off Aubrey Huff because, A, it was a woman doing well, and it was people standing up for the rights. That dude just straight out bigot. So anytime you make him upset, cool with me.
Absolutely. That's a great one. So apparently I was the only one that actually picked an actual play.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And that is going to be, and I, it's a great play, but it comes with a question. It's Riley Green's catch, the big catch over the wall. Great play. It was awesome to see. Now I have to ask you, as we end this show, you'll hear the music. Don't feel rushed. Jay, you first, and then Russ, just go right after. What was better, Riley Green's catch or Curtis Granderson's over the wall catch from years past? That's you, Jake.
It's Grandy. I was waiting for the music to kick in.
I know.
Granderson was my favorite Tiger. He was my Tiger.
All right. Rusty.
It's the Grandy man. Yeah. It happened in a real game. Like, dude, that was the first, like, that season was the first time that I learned to watch TV on my computer, and it was the first time I tried to take a screenshot of something that happened in a live game. Not to date myself.
Not to date yourself.
That's what I remember. Like, that catch was so unreal at the time. I'll take that one.
It's the Grandy, but I'm going to give Riley the vote because we finally have another outfielder that's willing to lay out for a ball. Like, someone that's going to try to dive for the ball. So, yeah, it was a great catch. It was awesome to see, and it was the first thing I thought of was Granderson's catch, which just shows you there's a lot of potential there if you're comparing him to a guy who we were all massive fans of. So that's going to do it for us here in Armchair Sports Talk. As always, this is a great show. We will be taking a break next week because one of us is making a decision that, well, if you have to, you have to.
Our stat man,
Russ Ivanak, is getting married. Taking the leap with his lovely, lovely fiance, soon-to-be wife, Mana, who we're all big fans of. So, Russ, as always, you make us sound a lot smarter than we really are. But in truth, you are very smart because you're marrying someone who is way out of your league.
Way smarter than me. Way out of my league in every sense. I know it.
But congratulations. We are so happy for you. We cannot wait to celebrate. So, next time, you hear it. It won't be Statman Russ Ivanak. It'll be Statman Russ Heshmati. And we're very excited for that.
You say it like it's an insult, but it's really not.
No, not even a little bit. No, but we appreciate it.
I appreciate the shout out. I'm excited for the next time we're on for this to be a three-ring circus.
Sadly, yeah, probably. And as always, Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus, the man who I spent an hour and a half wondering how he was going to work Miami into his thing, and it was a real quick little passerby. But as always, Sergeant Salty, you are the best, buddy.
Hey, is Miami even playing in the tournament in Orlando? Do they make it?
Probably not.
Damn it. All right. Well, I'll have to find another team next week to fall in love with. I'm always happy to be here.
All righty. And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.